Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the firing of Chicago's chief of police by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, only days after they held a joint press conference to announce the release of a videotape of a Chicago police officer shooting 17-year-old Laquan McDonald 16 times. Lisa Campbell, a 20-year veteran in law enforcement who grew up on the south side of Chicago in a family of police officers amid a culture of gangs and gang violence, joins us to discuss Mayor Emanuel's political failure to hold the police accountable while sitting on the incriminating video for 400 days, and the unsung heroes like Father Flager, who works to keep the peace, along with Lorenzo Davis, who was fired from Chicago's Independent Police Review Authority for not going along with the cover-up of 6 police shootings. Then we'll speak with Tony Fitzpatrick, a columnist with Chicago's alternative press, the New City newspaper, about whether Mayor Emanuel can keep a lid on the situation, having offered up a sacrificial lamb in the form of Superintendent Gary McCarthy, who Emanuel handpicked to run the Chicago Police Department in 2011. Then finally, we'll examine the overwrought rhetoric coming from Ted Cruz, who, when reminded that the shooter of the Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado proclaimed "no more baby parts," suggested that Robert Deere was a transsexual leftist. This coming from a presidential candidate whose campaign only days ago received an endorsement from Operation Rescue, the anti-abortion group who praised what they call the killing of baby killers. Elise Hoag, the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, joins us to discuss the lack of remorse or responsibility coming from those who have been busy lately demonizing Planned Parenthood. And joining us now is Lisa Campbell, who has served 20 years in law enforcement and comes from a family and community of police officers. Her mother, father, and brother, uncles, and cousins are police officers. She has worked in jails, courts, and the streets, and has worked investigations and conducted background investigations for the Los Angeles Police Department. Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, she grew up amid a culture infested with gangs and gang violence and offers a unique and raw perspective on the political impact on policing. She is currently working on a film called Shoot, Don't Shoot, a documentary that will attempt to bridge the gap by addressing the underlying issues that have led to the escalation of violence by and against the police in urban communities like Chicago. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lisa Campbell.
Thank you, Ian. Glad to be here.
And Lisa, as a police officer, you have succeeded in one of the crowning arrests of all time, where your work as a police officer led to the arrest of a kidnapping suspect, Philip Girardo, and the return of J.C. Lee Dugard, who in 1991, at the age of 11, was abducted from her South Lake Tahoe neighborhood. And she was a prisoner of this man for 18 years, and she bore him 2 children. And you basically figured out there was something wrong with this guy when he came to visit you at the police department in Berkeley, and that your instincts led to his arrest. So it doesn't get much better in police work, does it, to do that kind of thing?
Yeah, no, that's what we sign up for, to be a beneficial presence. And when we actually get to see the results of our work, it is no greater feeling. So I'm still grateful for my role in that. And I'm grateful for, you know, the great team of other officers that were involved that through that collaborative effort, freed J.C. Dugard.
So let's turn to Chicago, your hometown, and not a happy place. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, only days after having a major press conference with Superintendent Gary McCarthy, just fired him today. How do you see this? Is the superintendent a sacrificial lamb here?
The superintendent is, in fact, a sacrificial lamb. You know, the tragedy behind it is that if the superintendent could not have made the decision not to release the tape or to offer a $5 million settlement without the approval and the full knowledge of the mayor. In Chicago, the mayor appoints the superintendent. And so the problem is that as long as you have a mayor that appoints a superintendent, that superintendent is beholden to that mayor. This isn't the first challenge that they've had, and it's, to the best of my understanding, one of many to come in the near future. So Rahm Emanuel reacting to public pressure to get rid of Gary McCarthy after the fact speaks in volumes to, one, to the citizens of Chicago and to the communities that the police serve. He is essentially saying, you don't matter to me. because we knew about this a year ago, and we kept the officer on the job. We didn't take swift and direct action. Your vote doesn't matter to me. And so it is in fact disheartening to one the police that get up every day and do the job the right way, because you know this creates an uproar and attention with them, because now they're all re-lumped into one category. But the political impact needs to be addressed.
And at this point, the political impact, it's only through the work of people like Father Flager and others that are keeping the communities quiet, right? We've seen tremendous outbursts in Ferguson, Missouri and Baltimore, and arguably what the public saw in that videotape killing of Laquan McDonald is even more insightful, if you will, and yet somehow the community has not erupted.
I have to tell you, I'm proud of the citizens of Chicago. I'm proud and have a lot of respect and admiration for Father Flager, because the tension is brewing. You have a system that has failed. You have schools that have been closed. You have an outrageous dropout rate. You have gangs expanding their territory. You have a mayor that's not in touch with the day-to-day working class. And you have a chief of police who wasn't even in touch with the day-to-day officers and not in touch with the communities that those officers service. When you get to the arrogance where you're no longer listening to the rank and file and you're not listening to the people, then you are on a self-serving prophecy, and this is the impact.
Well, but in terms of not just crossing the line in terms of the shooting of Laquan McDonald, on the other side, if you will, of the divide, the execution of a 9-year-old boy by gang members and the fact that the father refused to cooperate, that's something new, isn't it? Something different. A line was clearly crossed there.
Well, I don't know if it's new. I think if you go all the way back to Dantrell Davis, you can go back in history and look at a lot of these shootings and see where the retaliation, this kid may have been related to another gang member. I think that it should be alarming. It should absolutely be alarming, and the father should be asking and answering direct questions. But again, one of the things that happens when you go outside of the city of Chicago to bring in a superintendent of police, he doesn't understand the demographics of that community. Chicago, unlike most cities, as a result of the housing segregation laws, is broken up into sects, into communities, into cultures. And you have to understand that faction of the gang and then follow that pattern to see the retaliation and retribution. So I won't say that that's new. I will say that it is devastating. But it's very real. If you look at the crime stats in Chicago with the urban crime in its own community versus the crime against the police and by the police, that this is just all coming to a head because of the press for the release of the tape. But this is much bigger, and there are many layers to this onion.
And again, I'm speaking with Lisa Campbell, who served 20 years in law enforcement and comes from a family and community of police officers. Her mother, father, and brother, uncles, and cousins are police officers. She has worked in the jails, courts, and the streets, and has worked investigations and conducted background investigations for the Los Angeles Police Department. Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, she grew up amid a culture infested with gangs and gang violence and offers a unique and raw perspective on the political impact on policing. She's currently working on a film called Shoot, Don't Shoot, a documentary that will attempt to bridge the gap by addressing the underlying issues that have led to the escalation of violence by and against the police in urban communities like Chicago. Let's turn to, we mentioned Father Flager as a hero, and there's another hero in this story, Lorenzo Davis, who was a member of this Chicago Police Review Commission, the Independent Commission, the Independent Police Review Authorities, as it's called. He was fired in July, and that office had reviewed more than 400 police-involved shootings since 2007, shootings that resulted in 70 people being killed. He apparently was fired because he didn't want to go along with, in fact, I think it was pretty much the case, was it not, of Jason Van Dyke and several other cases he thought were unjustified, and he was pretty much told by his superiors to turn the other cheek or basically say that they were justified shootings. So is he the whistleblower here, or is he the man who broke the thin blue line?
Well, in some respects, I think that thin blue line was even thinner you know, because of the different issues that are going on within the department. But I think that, one, I commend Lorenzo Davis, and I commend Father Flager, because they're both in the trenches. Lorenzo Davis is not just a police officer that they would have you to believe that's angry. And we interviewed him for the film. He's a part of the documentary. This is a man of dignity and integrity. This is a man who's paid his dues. He rose to be a boss within the Chicago Police Department. He's an attorney. He's done the work. He's taught in schools. He's been a big part of the community and still is. But when he said something's not right, this needs to be fixed, I refuse to compromise my integrity. And to my understanding, which led to his firing, I think that that should have shaken the mayor at that time. But then again, we're also looking at, I believe, the head of that agency, the person that made that decision, was also an appointee of the mayor. Again, if we don't look at these issues of political impact, then we're just kidding ourselves to think that we're going to get resolution.
And you're referring to Scott Ando, right, the chief administrator of the Chicago's Independent Police Review Authority. He was appointed by Rahm Emanuel, and he's the guy that basically told Lorenzo Davis not to look into these, not to proceed with any indictments against these officers. I believe there were six cases that he felt essentially were cases of police murder, if you will. So let's focus in on Rahm Emanuel now. He's sacrificed the chief of police. Surely the citizens of Chicago know that a lot more has to be done. I mean, is he really going to clean house? Is he going to have a... I mean, you already have an independent police review authority that's been covering up, and the head of it was just appointed by the mayor. It would seem to me the logical thing would be to put Lorenzo Davis in charge of that independent police review authority. But
I think that you know, in order to clean house, you have to start with where the problems are, right? You can't have, in other words, the problem starts with the politician, right? The politicians that have the power to make the appointments. So if you are willing to be corrupt, and what you clearly said to the citizens of Chicago is that we are okay. We covered this up. We kept this from the public. We paid this hush money for this case to go away. So your credibility has been compromised. And we could go on throughout his entire regime and see where, you know, we've had issues that should have been addressed up front, deal with it, clean it up, and fix the problem. But we haven't done that. And so I think that you should have a call for competency at this point. I think that Lorenzo Davis can offer insight and perspective, as can many Chicago police officers that have been on the job, that have taken the training, that have educated themselves, that know the community. There are people within that department that are willing to take a step forward, but not up under this administration.
But what about, Lisa Campbell, what about these officers like Jason Van Dyke? How many are there, and how do you purge the ranks of people like that?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that there, again, many layers to that onion, and I think that there is a culture that you have to address. I think that policing, urban policing today, needs a new look, right? And I think that that starts with having people who are independently voted in or independently assigned the position of chief, superintendent, commissioner, so forth and so on, so that they're not beholden to the politicians, but beholden to the citizens. And I think it starts there. I think that the sole purpose of our film is to bridge the gap, right, to create a dialogue where the police now understand this new culture and that we create a new culture of policing so that people aren't dying. And so where that starts is with trust. Historically, Chicago police had other police departments have a troubled legacy in urban communities. That's not going to go away overnight. Jason Van Dyke doesn't represent the majority of police officers. He absolutely represents the minority. But it does put a smudge on the entire culture of policing, which creates challenges in terms of officers trying to go out and do the job the right way with the full commitment. Now they have to not only deal with the calls, they have to deal with the manpower shortage. Now they have to deal with the fueled anger and resentment from the community that sees the police as the problem.
But in this case, though, as much a part of the problem would seem to me to be the fact that the authorities knew that this had happened and they sat on this video for 400 days. The mayor apparently knew about it. The chief of police knew about it. So you can't clean house if you sit on incriminating evidence, can you?
I agree. I mean, there's absolutely no way that you can clean house if, in fact, you're hiding stuff in the house. So they all need to go. Rahm Emanuel needs to go. Anita Alvarez needs to go. Gary McCarthy needs to go. You need to take a new look at policing. You need to look at policing 2015 in urban communities. We need to start by saying, listen, we've made mistakes. We own these mistakes. The bad guys have to go. We hear you. Because if not, there will continue to be a bloodbath.
And what do you think the chances of, I mean, are people thinking like this? Is Rahm Emanuel's efforts to sort of have Superintendent Gary McCarthy the sacrificial lamb in the hope that this will end? I take it from what you're implying, Lisa Campbell, is that it's not going to end, that the level of knowledge and anger and outrage, let me ask you this, has it reached a critical mass yet? I know Father Flager and others have kept the lid on major demonstrations, but it seems like this is a community that wants results. They don't want cosmetic sacrificial lambs.
Exactly. And what people have to do is not get tired and not get distracted. By this big move that he made. There are other cases that need to come to light, and there are people that need to be put in position to make changes directly. I would say that there is a shift in law enforcement. Because of this film, we've been able to interview some of the top law enforcement officials in the nation, and some who historically have been policymakers that have a tremendous impact on the wave of policing. We went to the International Chief of Police Conference in Chicago this year, and I have to tell you, I've been out of law enforcement actively sworn for almost 10 years, but I was absolutely impressed for the first time in many years at the conscious shift that chiefs of police are taking today. The problem is that if they're not allowed to police the way they need to, and they recognize everybody we interview recognizes that there has to be a shift. Everyone recognized that we got it wrong. We thought we were doing so well, but we had it wrong. Every chief that we interviewed said that. But the chief is only as good as he is beholden to the elected official that appoints him. So I think that there can be a shift. I'd like to think that it's not too late. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take rebuilding trust. It's going to take changing the way we hire, why we hire. You have to look at people. They make these campaign promises to hire 1,000 police officers a year. And when you have a campaign promise like that, what you send to the background unit is mass hire. Shortcuts are taken. People avoid processes that should take 4 or 5 months because there's no way you can do that reasonably and responsibly and give the citizens good officers. So you don't want new officers. You want good officers.
Well, tell us about your film and when we can see it. Shoot, Don't Shoot.
We just finished the trailer for Shoot, Don't Shoot last night. So Shoot, Don't Shoot is a rare and raw look into policing, actually. We went and we met with some of the top officials in law enforcement who are in a position now where they can openly talk. Because one thing that people misunderstand is that police officers aren't allowed to speak while they're on a job. So they're spokespeople for them. But we've got a unique opportunity to talk to the top. We talked to homicide detectives. We talked to people who have been in shootings, people who didn't shoot, people who got shot. And then we went into the community and talked to people who are most impacted by policing, right? The urban communities in Chicago where the violent crime rate, I think the weekend we were there filming, it was 50 shot one weekend. But we talked to these people about their understanding and impression and relationship with the police and why. And we even allowed the community to talk about what they think they need or would like to see in the police while owning their own accountability. So they're two sides. You have to look at the crime rate in those communities versus and all the underlying issues so that we can bridge that gap. So it's not just the police. There's so many underlying issues. There's hunger. There's unemployment. There's poverty. There's school closings. When Rahm Emanuel closed, 50 schools, I believe, you sent kids into gang territories that they never had to go to before. you said, again, to this community, as we close each school, we close a little bit more of you all. So you shot gang members into other territory. And without understanding that history and legacy in Chicago particularly, you won't catch why things are escalating in the fashion that they are. So the film captures that and talks about it from the place of how do we, one, bridge the gap and create a dialogue where we understand each other, and two, how do we create change? And Father Flager, we're grateful, was also an instrumental part of that as well.
Well, presumably that we'll be able to see the film sometime soon, right? Shoot, Don't Shoot.
Shoot, Don't Shoot, we're hoping to. We are now at the part of raising money for fundraising to finish the shoot, and we're hoping to have it done and out by April of 2016.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and I thank you very much for joining us here today, Lisa Campbell.
All right, thank you, Ian. I appreciate you.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Lisa Campbell, who has served 20 years in law enforcement and comes from a family and community of police officers. Her mother, father, and brother, uncles, and cousins are police officers. She has worked in the jails, courts, and the streets, and has worked investigations and conducted background investigations for the Los Angeles Police Department. Born and raised on the south side of Chicago, she grew up amid a culture infested with gangs and gang violence and offers a unique and raw perspective on the political impact on policing. She is currently working on a film called Shoot, Don't Shoot, a documentary that will attempt to bridge the gap by addressing the underlying issues that have led to the escalation of violence by and against the police in urban communities like Chicago. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into whether Mayor Emanuel can keep a lid on the situation in Chicago, having offered up a sacrificial lamb.
Mother's arms is murder. New absence in a mother's arms. Even the warmth of a mother's arms could not keep a son from harm. Standing where the gun was drawn, overcome, done and done, he gone. Murder. Shell shell like a bell and run. The blood burst, body temperature fell and plunged. And in the time it took the medics to come, the breath eased out of his lungs, and the soul eased out of the slums, and the voice eased out of the drums. The siren.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Tony Fitzpatrick, who's a columnist with the New City newspaper in Chicago. He's both an actor and an artist. And Tony, didn't you play we're going to be talking about the resignation or the forced resignation of the chief of police or the superintendent of police in Chicago. You played the Chicago police chief, didn't you, in a Spike Lee movie?
Yeah, it's going to come out Friday, Chirac. I'm the chief of police in it.
Oh, really? So do you have any...
I still got my job, Ian.
Well, I'm glad you do. So there's a couple of characters that we don't know about here, and particularly on the West Coast, that have come up and you've written about in your column in the New City newspaper, which is the sort of alternative newspaper, I guess, in Chicago. Father Flager, who's an interesting character.
Father Michael Flager, he's been the pastor of St. Sabina Parish on Chicago's south side in the Auburn-Gresham neighborhood for 40 years. He is a white pastor of an all-African-American Catholic congregation. And he is what, you know, you refer to when you mean a community organizer. He has a platform in his neighborhood, and it's hard-earned after four decades of representing people and trying to make the peace and trying to get something like equitable treatment for the city's one of the city's more neglected neighborhoods.
And, of course, there's a lot of similarities with Father Flager and Father Greg Boyle here in Los Angeles, who started Homeboy Industries. Describe, if you will, this war, if you will, between the police. I mean, so much of what we've been seeing lately.
Well, Ian, it's systemic at this point, and it's been going on for years. This is not a new story. This story has its footing in both daily administrations. And before that, Kennelly and William Hale Thompson. Honestly, what became apparent is that to be poor and black in Chicago is to be in exile.
And this ritual that went on then, today, with the mayor firing the superintendent of police only, what, days after they had a joint press conference announcing...
Yeah, the night that the Laquan McDonald, you know, police execution, you really can't call it any other thing, was released after it had been quashed and kept quiet for 400 days. I think both men realized that they couldn't spin it. Emanuel could not pretend that he had no knowledge of it, even though he was reelected in those 400 days. And McCarthy, I don't think, could honestly say that he had control of his police force. I have a little bit of sympathy for Jerry McCarthy. I mean, I think he worked very hard with a department that had a long history of this kind of thing. And, trying to change the culture of police was, I think, one of his primary challenges. Plus, I think the Chicago police force is probably undermanned by about 1,000 to 1,500 officers. And in the areas where there's high crime and we lose 400, mostly children, to gunfire every year, are primarily, African-American neighborhoods on the south and southwest side.
And the 400 days you refer to, Attorney Fitzpatrick, of course, are the 400 days that the police and the chief and the mayor sat on
and
this incriminating...
Attorney Anita Alvarez. He said that she was keeping this invisible from the public to build a case. I don't believe that. I don't think anybody who is an media in Chicago really believes that. I think that it was kept quiet to reinsure the reelection of Rahm Emanuel and State's Attorney Alvarez, who is running for reelection pretty soon, which she probably will. My guess is she will lose. Big. But this had, the effect of, we're all kind of sad and scared that with the events of Baltimore and Ferguson kind of fresh in our minds from the last year. But you know what? Because of guys like Father Flager, like Lorenzo Davis, like other people in the community, the demonstrations were largely peaceful.
And the Lorenzo Davis, who you referred to, seems very much the hero in this case because...
Yeah, he's the guy they fired because he wanted to investigate, more carefully some of the wrongful death suits and wrongful shooting suits. He was for the Chicago Independent Police Review Authority. And the minute he said, something stinks here, they fired him. His termination came less than 2 weeks after they evaluated Davis, and they seemed to find that he had a clear and obvious bias against the police. This man's a former policeman.
Right, but he's a commander, a police commander.
Yeah.
And he...
I also think he was one of those guys who knows the way it is in Chicago. And honestly, we have a couple of gang problems. We have the gang problems that are endemic to all of the poor neighborhoods in the city. And then we got the gang with the blue uniforms and the badge. And that's part of the problem here.
Again, I'm speaking with Tony Fitzpatrick, who is a columnist with the New City newspaper in Chicago. He's both an actor and an artist, and we're talking about the resignation of the forced resignation of
the firing.
I mean, okay.
Yeah.
This is the guy.
The thing is that Rahm Emanuel has learned the very daily-esque secret of having human sacrifices. This is systemic. This rock goes deep. they should fire the six cops who stood around while this officer kept firing bullets into this young man. They should fire the people who put him on desk duty and then paid him for another year after this. The culture of policing in the Chicago Police Department has to change. And I, for one, I mean, I'm not really confident that Rahm Emanuel can do this. I've not been a fan of his since he took office. I mean, the first thing he tried to do was break the teachers' union. Well, you know, for a guy who's as smart as he is, and he is the smartest guy we ever elected, he doesn't know his labor history. Labor dies hard in Chicago. In the late 1800s, you know, four people went to the gallows for the eight-hour workday. The history of labor was practically written in this city. In fact, 30 years ago, if you threw labor under the bus, you would have never gotten elected. But he tried to break the teachers' union. He got his ass handed to him. And then he, you know, after that, very churlishly, he closed 50 schools, fired another 500 education administrators. And, you know, a more cynical man might think that he was trying to thin the ranks of the teachers' union. And next week he's looking at a teacher's strike. So this is really not a good couple of weeks to be Mayor Rahm Emanuel.
Well, Lorenzo Davis, who was fired from the oversight commission that had been set up to investigate police shootings, the Independent Police Review Authority. He's a former commander and detective. He apparently felt, and we're talking about 400 officer-involved shootings since 2007, resulting in 70 people killed. And apparently, along with this policeman, police officer Jason Van Dyke, who was indicted for murder, there are, I think, about six cases that Lorenzo Davis thought were similar. I don't know what's happening to those cases. So is there any chance that, is this just the...
Well, I think Lorenzo Davis now has, you know, a platform with which he can be heard from. I think that perhaps, you know, I mean, Emanuel said today that they're going to appoint a special commission. It's like, yeah, we're going to investigate ourselves. I think this calls for a much deeper and more morally resonant probe than having the CPD, you know, investigate themselves.
Well, that was the whole point of this commission, that clearly wasn't doing its job. And the guy in the Independent Police Review Authority who tried to do his job, Lorenzo Davis, he gets fired. So,
and then the guy who bore witness from the Fraternal Order of Police on the Laquan McDonald shooting said that it was an absolutely justifiable shoot. I mean, you know, they circled the wagons, you know, and they don't like guys who they perceive as crusaders.
Well, that's known as the thin blue line.
Oh yeah, no, it's anything but thin here.
Right. Well, so do you think that the man who broke the thin blue line, Lorenzo Davis, will Rahm Emanuel reappoint him?
Perhaps as an investigator to the, you know, complaints of wrongful shootings and wrongful death. I think he it would behoove him to do so. In fact, I think somebody like him should perhaps head that kind of investigative unit. You know, judging from the actions of the last couple of weeks, I don't know that you can ask the Chicago Police Department to investigate itself. You know, this is a city of, you know, cops are very often brothers and uncles and related and neighborhood friends. And, you know, this is a city of kind of small towns.
But if you could, telling us that, Tony, though, give us also the other side where, you know, we heard about this hideous incident where a 9-year-old boy was lured in an alley and shot by gang members.
And shot and by opposing.
Right, and his father, refused to cooperate with the police because he's a gang banger. There's a whole other side to Chicago.
You know what?
Well.
Exactly. And you know what? There used to be a code. There used to be a code out there among the gangs where they didn't shoot children, they didn't shoot mothers, they didn't do this kind of thing. And somehow those kind of boundaries, those kind of street boundaries have been broken. And it is to the shame of, you know, our whole city of Chicagoans. You know, we no longer have the luxury of thinking that this is a problem for the black community to solve for itself. This is a problem for Chicagoans. And it's been brought into high relief in very sharp focus by the actions and the stories of the last 2 weeks. We have to do some very intense soul searching about the kind of city that we want to be.
Well, that will require leadership. And again, you get back to Rahm Emanuel. He obviously tried to cover this thing up and brush it under the table.
I honestly don't think Rahm Emanuel will complete this term, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think there are people who could be better mayors. I think Tony Preckwinkle would make a wonderful mayor. I think she'd do a great job. I think David Orr would be a terrific mayor, who was briefly mayor for one day after Harold Washington died. I think Alderman Scott Wagesbach would make a terrific mayor. I mean, there are people who can lead, and there are people who can do it transparently in the full light of day.
But do you feel that emotions will intervene in the sense that there's been a powder keg since the video of the murder of Laquan that we all saw? Do you think?
I think that we're going to happen, and perhaps sort of happened by now. And I think, luckily, I think our community leaders have done a great job.
And that's again,
you know, I mean, I particularly credit, you know, leaders like Father Michael Flager, you know, who told people, you know, protest but peacefully. You know, I mean, they kind of shut down North Michigan Avenue on Black Friday. And the idea was when they only care about the money, then you stop the money. I think that Chicago proved ourselves to be a reasonable place when we need to be reasonable. And in any other city, I think the Laquan McDonald tape might have incited something absolutely awful. I mean, I'm actually proud of Chicago that we kept our heads.
Well, but a sacrificial head has rolled. You're saying that the mayor is not capable of doing the healing that's necessary. So
I don't think I don't think the trust is there. I mean, if you look at his record since he took office, it's hard to believe that this man came out of the Obama White House. I mean, mostly what he's been concerned with is bringing business and conventions and, you know, the George Lucas Museum on the lakefront, things like that. And what the city desperately needs is attention to its infrastructure, an absolute rehauling of its educational system. Right. You know, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance.
Well, of course, Rahm Emanuel did a stint on Wall Street before he joined the Obama
White
House.
Yeah, and to my curiosity, it's never been completely explained what he did for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. You know, people go, well, he was on the board. Well, what were his duties?
Right.
I mean, because both of those companies were up to their necks in toxic mortgages. Whenever somebody comes to govern from the private sector, strictly business, I get very nervous.
Well, just in closing, Tony Fitzpatrick, you've more or less told us that there are a couple of heroes here that are holding the line, not the thin blue line that was broken by a very courageous police officer, Lorenzo Davis, but the line between civility and anarchy. And
all of the people out there working in the communities with the protests, the kids from Black Lives Matter, Father Michael Flager, I mean, there was a modicum of civility that was maintained. It did not turn into a violent free-for-all with more loss of life. I'm very proud of Chicago for that.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us, Tony Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it.
And again, I've been speaking with Tony Fitzpatrick, who's a columnist with the New City newspaper in Chicago. He's both an actor and an artist, and we're talking about events today where the mayor fired the chief of police. But clearly, from what Tony has told us, that is not the end of the story. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back discussing the lack of remorse or responsibility coming from those who have been busy lately demonizing Planned Parenthood. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Elise Hoge, who's the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America and the former director of political advocacy and communications for MoveOn.org, who has been a senior strategist to Democratic and progressive groups, including Media Matters for America, Public Campaign, and Rebuild the Dream. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elise Hoge.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here.
And there's been some extraordinary overwrought pushback from many of the Republican presidential candidates, many of whom have been saying the most inflammatory things about Planned Parenthood. But the most extraordinary one of all was the remarks by Senator Ted Cruz, where he suggested that the person who murdered the two people at the Planned Parenthood clinic, along with a police officer, and one of the people murdered, of course, was an Iraq war veteran, doesn't get much worse than that. The guy, when he was arrested, told the police, no more baby parts. And yet somehow Ted Cruz said that this fellow was a transgender leftist. So how do you get this message out that there is an apparent correlation between the demonization of Planned Parenthood by the Republicans and this horrible incident in Colorado?
You know, I think that the message is actually getting out loud and clear. I mean, Ted Cruz's response was so off the rails that I think most Americans see it as what it is, which is a deflection of his own embracing of the inflamed rhetoric that leads directly to deranged individuals targeting Planned Parenthood and other women's health clinics. But, you know, I think it's worth your listeners knowing that Ted Cruz is not an independent actor, and the GOP is just one manifestation of a well-coordinated, well-funded effort that actually, you know, seeks to end abortion in our country entirely and works in concert to disempower women. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen over the weekend is it's not just Ted Cruz, but it's Troy Newman from Operation Rescue, who has actually argued that there should be state-sanctioned execution of abortion doctors, who then all of a sudden, when somebody takes that vision into his own hands, is backpedaling furiously and saying, you know, no, no, I didn't really mean it. The connection is really clear, however, because Ted Cruz, literally 5 days before the shooting happened, accepted an endorsement from Troy Newman, who is a man so extreme in his ideology that Australia wouldn't even let him enter the country because they were worried he would incite violence against women and doctors. So you can draw a straight line from the president of Operation Rescue, who has advocated for killing abortion doctors, to Ted Cruz, who embraced Troy Newman's endorsement, to the kind of violence that is inevitable when you allow the political rhetoric to become as hateful and deceptive as it has become around abortion rights.
But there's a trajectory here that you can follow, and that is, and it's curiously similar to what brought about one of the biggest changes in the American political landscape, and that is the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court that has allowed money to pour into our elections. Citizens United made a hit film against Hillary Clinton, and that somehow got blown up into a Supreme Court ruling. This whole recent demonization, or the latest round of demonization, I should say, against Planned Parenthood, began with a sting video that was first shown to the Republican Congress. And they, of course, got up in arms. And then it got to the point recently, and it's still a possibility, that they were prepared to shut down the entire United States government because of this film. And the shooter in this case, Robert Deere, said no more baby parts. So it's pretty hard not to believe that there's a connection there, surely.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it seems to have fallen on deaf ears that the video has subsequently been sort of completely deconstructed as at best deceptive, right? And at worst sort of intentionally inflammatory. And most voters have, first of all, let's be clear, Planned Parenthood as a name polls higher than any presidential candidate, right? So in terms of smearing one of our most beloved healthcare providers in the country in the public's mind, it's not working. What it does do is throw fuel on the fire and light the match of deranged individuals who are looking for a place to take out their rage, and now they're targeting it at these health clinics. And it's not, you know, as you said, it's David DeLeiden who constructed those videos. It's Troy Newman who says that rhetoric. But it's also Ted Cruz and Carly Fiorina, who doubled down when called out by Chuck Todd, saying, but the video has been shown to be, you know, the scene on the video that you're talking about has been shown to be a fake. She will not accept facts and continues to perpetrate the lies in the face of overwhelming evidence. And so I think you're absolutely right that there's a direct line. I don't know if you saw, but the Democrats in Congress today called for disbanding the Planned Parenthood Special Committee because nobody has found any wrongdoing despite dozens of states moving forward in Republican-controlled territory with their own investigations, and because most voters do not want to pay Congress to look into bogus claims with an ideological agenda to end abortion and oppress women.
And again, I'm speaking with Elise Hogue, who's the president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, and the former director of political advocacy and communications for MoveOn.org, who has been a senior strategist to Democratic and progressive groups, including Media Matters for America, Public Campaign, and Rebuild the Dream. And by the way, this clinic in Colorado had been under threat for some time and demonstrations, etc. So, and apparently, according to the head of Planned Parenthood, it was one of the benefits, if you will, of their vigilance was that they put in a very effective video system that the police were able to watch in real time so that they could, you know, prevent more deaths and find out where the shooter was at all times. So it's not like this neighborhood is not hostile, at least elements in this neighborhood in Colorado are not hostile to Planned Parenthood. What troubles me is that I've never seen a situation where you have a mass shooting on this scale, and unfortunately we have them on a fairly regular basis. But invariably, very quickly, the press is on to who it is, what the motives are. If you recall the shooter down in the church in South Carolina, it wasn't long before you had all kinds of information about him. I don't feel that there's a lot of information coming out about this. And are the local people in that community who are largely influenced by Christian evangelical dogma, are they circling the wagons here? Or is this information, do you feel it's coming out?
It's hard to tell. What I would say is it's obviously not only local authorities that are involved at this point. The Department of Justice is undertaking its own investigation. The FBI, I know, has been involved. It's, one of the reasons, even before the shooting, we had undertaken an effort with a lot of allies to actually get the Department of Justice to categorize clinic violence as domestic terrorism. It's ideologically driven. It's designed to intimidate people. It meets the definition of terrorism. So I don't know that the local community could circle the wagons if they wanted to, because obviously this is bigger than just one clinic shooting. This is a pattern of violence against abortion and women's health clinics that spans decades. And the question is, how far are we willing to let the ideological extremists go in controlling elements of our government and creating a culture of tolerance for this kind of violence against women?
So given that Senator Ted Cruz and most of the other Republicans running for president have also voiced opposition, in fact, well, you mentioned Carly Farina, where she waxed eloquent describing a video that just simply doesn't exist of the fetus and the beating heart and the twitching limbs, and challenged Hillary Clinton to watch this mythical video. So it's not as if they haven't really staked out a lot of territory here. But it does seem that their tactic is to double down as opposed to accept responsibility for inflaming the rhetoric and demonizing this organization, Planned Parenthood. Has the opportunity passed, or is this just a question of political tactics and the more brazen you are, the greater chance you have of toughing it out?
Oh, I certainly don't think the opportunity is passed. I think that the public at large is absolutely, repulsed by what happened in Colorado Springs. I think, the sort of crocodile tears that we're hearing from some of these groups, and not really even so much from the candidates, is really not sitting well with people right now. We are going to continue to press on the Ted Cruzes about why they're willing to accept endorsement from these ideological extremists. And, I think come next year, when it's time to vote, people need to be reminded of this, because these are not the folks that we want in charge of our government.
Well, when you kill an Iraq war vet, you kill innocent people, it's pretty extraordinary. And most of all, this policeman that they killed was such apparently beloved character in the community. And he'd rushed to the scene. It wasn't even his jurisdiction. As far as I can tell, just in terms of optics, it just doesn't get any worse than that. And I would have thought that under the current circumstances, a lot of these people who have been beating the drum and demonizing Planned Parenthood would just simply have a moment of reflection, if not shame. That's what I feel is missing from this. It's just, maybe that's just our political discourse has become so crude and degraded lately that perhaps I'm being naive and I shouldn't expect that. But it would seem to me this is a moment for people to, if not apologize, at least to have a moment of reflection, if not shame.
Yeah, I would think so, too. There are a lot of dynamics at play here, certainly, because as I remind people all the time, abortion rights are human rights and used to be treated that way by both people on both sides of the aisle. But the capture of the modern-day Republican Party by an increasingly extreme but actually quite small minority in this country has forced a shrillness and a zealotry to our politics that I think is really hurting our country as a whole. And, I hope that this recent tragedy is a real wake-up call. We're certainly looking for leaders to use it to open a new chapter, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well, apart from what you mentioned, and my understanding is that Paul Ryan was indicating that he would not change the House's plans to proceed with a special panel that has already been compared to the panel that spent millions of taxpayers' dollars investigating Benghazi. So is this witch hunt against Planned Parenthood, at least in the House, being stalled, or is it just that the Democrats were asking for it?
Well, I think it's too soon to tell. I think that, Paul Ryan is continuing to try and satisfy his base, even in the face of overwhelming evidence that even Republicans actually don't want taxpayer dollars, as you said, spent on this kind of bogus investigation against a boogeyman most people actually like. But, you know, I think they should proceed with caution, you know, and at their own expense, because the priorities of American people are about expanding personal liberties, expanding economic opportunity, and not actually rolling back rights that most Americans believe in.
Well, it's pretty clear that there have been all kinds of investigations already, and that there's a law on the land known as the Hyde Amendment that's been in effect now for decades that means that no federal funds can go to abortion. So there's never been a case. So my sense is that what happened a few weeks ago on stage, I think it was out here in Simi Valley in front of Ronald Reagan's Air Force One, where Carly Farina made that speech about this Planned Parenthood video, is that this was clearly a case of pandering to the religious right, who apparently are pretty much the important constituency in Iowa. So is that what it comes down to in a curious way, that, you know, that people will simply say anything and be inflammatory and irresponsible just to get the votes of this one particular constituency that seems to have a inordinate influence, what, you know, punching way above their weight?
I think that that's absolutely true, and it only works in primary season. And that's why in 2014, we saw people like the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, fighting for his political life, actually disavowing what is a very clear anti-choice record. He did a straight-to-camera ad saying, "I believe in every woman's right to make her own decision," after doing more to make abortion impossible to access in Wisconsin than any previous governor. The GOP candidates really understand this plays against them in that general election, but they are creating a race to the bottom in the primary in order to satisfy, as I say, an extremist base that's trying to impose their own narrow ideological agenda on the rest of the country. And our job is to not let voters forget in the general election just how these GOP candidates stood by people who advocated murder. If we let them forget, as you said, an Iraq war veteran, an innocent woman, a police officer's death would be in vain, and that would be unacceptable in America.
Well, somebody's got blood on their hands, that's for sure, and I'll let the audience connect the dots there, and I thank you for joining us, Elise Hoag.
Thank you so much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Elise Hoag, who's the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America and the former director of political advocacy and communications for MoveOn.org, who has been a senior strategist to Democratic and progressive groups, including Media Matters for America, Public Campaign, and Rebuild the Dream. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can scroll down on the right-hand side and sign up for iTunes podcasts. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared.